on energy efficiency should have actually, that space should have been opened even at the level of allowing beyond education. Even the education element is not being pursued fully. But beyond that, maybe get people to actually, that will, how do I put this? That will specialize in energy efficiency instead of making it a national problem. Having a local approach to it and focusing on it specifically and not just putting it as one of those things that you can talk about. It's not being done. And where I was saying to Salga National, allow the space for, not consultants, but allow space for people that can give employment. Our approach was this. We would take 100 unemployed graduates who have maybe BCom graduates. And I'll tell you why we say BCom graduates, because we want them to actually do the monitoring and we want them to actually do the actual education aspect. We want them to actually go and do the implementation phase, the same person in that particular area. We gave a proposal that says you take in a group 100 BCom graduates, you train them properly on energy efficiency over a period of time, you then deploy those people into the community where the cost to carry that is actually funded by the program itself. I don't want to go too much into it, but insofar as saying that the program is sustainable per area, all that we need, and we are pleading with the committee today and will continue to do so in the proposal that we'll put forward, is that it's always been a cost factor to ESCOM and to the Department of Energy, but also a policy, a political will. I don't want to tread too much on that front. But just to say, sometimes it really honestly just needs a yes, and not always about funding. You know, whenever we get proposals that come from outside, they are always looked at as, why didn't it come from ESCOM, or why didn't it come from NERSA, or why didn't... Sometimes you just look at it and see, is this thing viable? And hopefully this is the platform where that will be looked upon with those eyes. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Another response?
Honourable Chair?
Yes.
With regards to your question, sir, on the retrofit, we don't have those stats with us right now. We will get back to you as short as we can via email or phone or something like that to give you the facts with regards to the retrofit. However, we do see there's a big market in the industry for, from a thermal perspective, and we'll get those facts back to you, sir.
Thank you.
And,
I trust we can work together to even see if we can pull the ear of one of the Thermal Integration Association leaders to come.
Yes, we will do that. We'll get hold of TIASA, who we are considerable members of them, but we will get maybe the chair of TIASA to come and present as well.
Thank you. Anneli?
Honourable Chair, honourable members, just in response to the question, measurement and verification at smart grids, a match made in heaven. If we had smart grids with the right metering, we would be able to centralise the measurement and verification data quite easily. The mismatch in this marriage is that smart grids is sort of a medium to long term program. Measurement and verification we need to do as in yesterday to justify these amounts. But eventually, the two will merge, and you'll be able to access that data real-time from any point in the country or any point in the world. So, yes, definitely the way to go. On your question about the IFC assessment...
But the logic is that the way verification should be done right now, should be such that it dovetails with the introduction of fund creation. We don't have three steps forward and five steps back in future. In other words, you introduce measurement and verification strategies and procedures, which when at the introduction of smart grid honorable members would compel the review of the whole measurement and verification practices, which I sense from what Mr. Braden Gum is saying, that MNB are supposed to be an integral of smart grid on the overall. Thank you.
Certainly, Chair. Thank you very much for bringing up that point. The second question about the IFC SASFIN partnerships in providing funding to small or emerging ESCOs, and in relation to our DFIs, for example, IDC and DVSA, they're also doing very good work. Unfortunately, by the nature of the work, there seems to be a lot of bureaucracy involved in accessing those funds. From their side, it's also quite difficult to disperse of these funds. I know the DVSA has got a particular problem in dispersing of the funds that they have, but they are also doing very good work targeted at different sectors of the market, DVSA specifically on municipal programs where there's a lot of infrastructure, and then IDC looking at the broad scale of energy efficiency from an industrial point of view. And then lastly, Chair, the public participation and awareness that's needed. I quite agree with you. A good example is we looked at the petrol price going up last night. We see the queues at the petrol stations last night. The petrol price was announced last week. We didn't see people from last week queuing up. People waited. So the messaging has called to action people to do something at a particular time. That's why the message needs to be continuous. And my colleague from the Department of Energy, the Chief Director, this morning and I had a brief chat about we have to get together and discuss a all-encompassing program where the public are involved, because right now it's actually quite confusing. You have a power alert, you have an Eskom campaign, you might have a municipal campaign, you might have one of the NGOs running a campaign about energy efficiency, and all of them are sending out messages, and then you have the water people telling us about the water problems. We need a resource efficiency campaign, not this, because I do believe if I change my behavior in the way I look at saving energy, I'd probably do exactly the same with water and all other resources, recycling, etc. So we need to cross these barriers and look at resource efficiency in totality, that we change people's behavior in totality, because right now, from a consumer perspective, it becomes quite confusing because you have the water people one day, the waste people the next day, the energy people, the municipal people, and you're just saying, what must I do? There's no one message. So in terms of public participation, we need to actually see what the public want. We need to involve a broader group of people. For example, I had a chat with some people the other day, and it's just one of these things that we overlook. The blind. What are we doing for the blind in terms of energy efficiency? A blind person doesn't know when the lights are on or off because they can't see. So they could be leaving their lights on all the time. There's no way of them realizing the lights on. What are we doing in terms of informing the blind? And we know we have the big school for the blind at Worcester. Are we doing something for them? In Braille, we've seen international case studies where the energy bill is provided in Braille, where various messaging is provided in Braille. Appliance labeling, for example. As a blind person needs to buy a refrigerator, we're saying, well, put a label on it, says A rated, it's green, it's good, and G is red, don't buy. What does the blind person do? He also needs a refrigerator. Why aren't those labels in Braille, for example? So we have to look out of the box. We have to take things that we take for granted out of the equation and look at broader community participation and central participation. And we plan to do that together with the Department of Energy in the foreseeable future. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Come over to Mr. Kutena.
Honourable Chairman, Honourable Members of the Committee, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Dani Kutsir. I'm from Upington in the Northern Cape. I'm a farmer, so in the way I represent the farming community. I think we must first look at the current situation where the Eskom's supply is just in balance with the current demand. So we have to put in new capacity. what choices do we have? You can put in coal-fired power stations. This will lead to global warming, you know. You can put in nuclear power stations. They also have their challenges. Or we can put in renewable energy systems, and we know they are expensive. If you look at the hourly electricity demand, you see a peak between 7 and 11 in the evening. This is due to household use, where the people get home from work and they start making food, boiling water, pre coffee, etc. This is just another graph of the same demand trends. It's the winter peak and the summer peak, and so the highest and the lowest peaks. If you compare the cost of new capacity for coal-fired power stations, we will need about 30 rand per watt in each watt we have to install. For nuclear, it's a little bit more, you say 40 rand per watt. For solar with storage, you need 50 rand per watt. For solar without storage, you need 20 rand per watt. But now we know that solar only runs during the daytime, it's without storage. If you use energy more efficient, you can put in high voltage electric motors, you can put in, you can use magnetic induction cooktops, LED street lights, solar water heaters, light bulbs so they're more efficient, etc. But if you look at the daily demand patterns that the household use, this peak is made up of kettles that are boiling, fridges that are running, so you can't do much to lower that peak. Now we can look at the price trend for solar PV. As you see, from 2 years ago it was about 30 rand per watt, now we are stand at 10 rand per watt. So if we calculate the cost of our electricity there, we are nearing grid parity at this stage. If you look at South Africa, we have the best solar potential in the world. So why don't we use it? I don't know. What we suggest is that we allow homeowners to store electricity in the national grid and subsidize limited backup battery capacity for between 6 and 9 in the evening. The benefits of this is capital costs are much lower than the cost of new capacity compared with nuclear and coal-fired power station. Home systems do not require large areas of usable land. They use little water. You know, don't need an environmental impact study. And the home owners can generate an income. You can see that 1 billion homes, each with a 5 kilowatt solar system on the roof, can generate the same amount of power as two power stations. This is just a few possible solutions that we are looking at. One is the home systems, the other is solar charged cars for short distance. Short distance. We know that the electric cars are not suitable for long distances. If you use solar cars and charge it from the national grid, you also use the electricity from the power station. And that also contributes to pollution. If you put up a charging station for a small distance car that it can run, say, 100 kilometers per day, most housewives don't travel much farther than that. In the farming community, we are looking at ways, instead of using biodiesel, look at ways to convert our implements to produce food, with running on solar and battery backups, etc. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay. So, parang kumindir kutu. Now let's have parts industrial. speak and use the microphone for for recording purposes. For recording purposes. Thank you very much. For recording purposes, would you please use the microphone? Thank you very much.
Yeah, my question was going to be, Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members and Members of the Public, if I could stand and move, because my dad's Italian and we have a kind of a culture of movement, and I also used to be a performer. And so between the two, you know, my wife always accuses me of being overly theatrical. So it's very difficult for me, but I'm going to, for purposes of recording, do my best to sit and behave. I generate my own energy clearly. There may be some potential there. Okay, guys, thank you very much, honourable members and honourable chair and everybody else for the opportunity. My name is Peter. I'm from Pert Industrials. Over there, you can see. We've been making technical and scientific education materials since 1967. That unit over there that you see in the middle is our electronics trainer, which is probably our most popular trainer, which we make in our factory in Joburg. It's for teaching and experiments in light current electricity. We've been a selling partner of Pasco Scientific since 1978. This is one of their devices. Selling partner is kind of the new business term for agent. There's legal ramifications for saying agency for everyone, to be sort of polite and in business protocol say selling partner. But we're the agents of Pasco Scientific. Okay, the PERT team, just quickly, we've got over 20 staff members, includes engineers and educators. As the Honourable Chairperson noted, engineers are not always the best educators, and they tend to speak in certain terms, and it's good to have educators and engineers working together to make the equipment and also to make it you know, useful in for teaching purposes. We're mostly up in Joburg. When I say mostly, everybody's up in Joburg except for me, one lucky guy in Cape Town. Now, honourable members who are originally from Gauteng or from Gauteng, that's where I was born and bred, so I'm not, you know, saying anything about my home province. But it's great to be down here. So that's where I'm based. I'm based in Johannesburg, but all our capacity is up. At least I'm based in Joburg, Cape Town, but all our capacity is up in Joburg.
But the Cape Town weather is horrible.
I don't think it's that bad. I think it's people who live in Cape Town try and promote this idea, but after about 5 years here, I think there's something to be said of the Cape Town weather. Right now in Johannesburg, it's very windy and very dry. So that's not my favorite. Okay. All right. So why am I here? This is something that my dad told me a little while ago. He showed this device called the thermoelectric converter. It's made by Pasco. It's a device that you basically put one leg in hot water and one leg in cooler water, maybe 50 degrees temperature difference between the two, and the fan starts to spin. The other thing you can do is you can connect it to a power supply, and you can have one leg becoming hotter than the other. I'm sorry, this I only found out about this presentation on Monday. If I had a bit more time, I would have actually brought one to show you guys. It works very well. So now it's an effective demonstration without getting too technical, but it's about thermodynamics, specifically the second law of thermodynamics. It looks at energy conversion between heat energy and electrical energy. My dad was showing this device, spoke to some potential clients up in KZN, and he happened to know, he has a great general knowledge, that there was a similar device working in their harbor, using the temperature difference between one area and the area that was in the water. And there was quite a large temperature difference, and they were getting some electricity out of that turbine. And it's related to another form of technology, which has been around for a while as well, called a Stirling engine, which works with temperature difference. With a Stirling engine, if you maybe stick a bit of ice on the one side of it, you can get it to spin, which is quite surprising to a lot of people, because you assume that you need extra heat, but really, fundamentally, what you need is a difference in temperature. So this is a concept which is both interesting and important. It's important. There's been a lot of talk about education. So this is an idea about energy and where you get it. That is very important. So So my dad spoke about this, and the response was, very interesting. It is interesting. It's when you see this little cup top engine work, you start thing. But have a guess what the next comment was, next. In other words, thank you for showing this to us. We're not interested. It's interesting, but it's not in the curriculum. It's not in the syllabus. Stirling engines aren't in the syllabus. Thermoelectric conversion, thermodynamic principles, these are underrepresented in the teaching syllabus. I was looking at this stage, it was in a high school. The idea is, and I think this is basically the idea of my presentation, teachers are facing a lot of challenges. I know, I meet them on a nearly daily basis. They've got limited time, curriculums get adjusted, there's quite large classes. If something is not in the curriculum, they won't teach it. And it's not because they have any specific objection to the content, it's just because they don't have the time, the resources available. So we're thinking of looking at this from a slightly different angle, because we're educators and we make educational material, for more activities in school, particularly primary school, because that's where there's a little bit more time available. A lot of our customers are in the science centers, and they say, you know, they actually see the primary school learners coming through, early high school learners coming through, and are interested there, because by the time you get to grade 10 to 12, there's a lot of time pressure, and there's not much opportunity for experimentation and work with devices. Looking at energy storage, distribution, efficiency, and renewables. So this has got one aspect, awareness, interest, and enthusiasm, stimulation there, and also has, at the same time, science and technology education benefits. And I think we're all aware that there are challenges. That's another one of these politically correct terms. We might even say problems. There are difficulties with science and technology education all around the country, particularly in the Eastern Cape, where I was recently doing some training workshops. So you can maybe address two needs. One is education in energy efficiency and the possibilities, and another maybe some scientific and technological education simultaneously. Okay, so let me just quickly show you two examples of how this might work. This is where I was really going to stand up and do a little prep for you guys, but maybe I can get this across vocally. Solar shading and energy and loads. Okay, this is the one. Okay, the one. This activity looks at how will shading a solar panel affect the voltage output of the panel and predict the effect of hard shading and soft shading on the voltage output of a solar panel. So you use this solar panel, you connect it to this temperature sensor. There's various ways of measuring. You can also use a multimeter, and you don't have to use this panel. But the idea is you construct little obstructions to different parts of the solar panel, maybe a hard obstruction, which would be maybe something to do with your hand or a piece of paper, and a softer obstruction, maybe some leaves, tissue paper, and have a look at the effect of these different obstructions. And that relates to a similar lab in the course material on insulation and seasons. As you tilt the solar panel, or even just some cardboard, with a temperature sensor over here, you can have a look at, depending on the angle, the amount of light, heat energy, a surface receives, you get different results. And that helps you to understand the seasons. The Earth has its own tilt on its axis, and you can have a look at the amount of heat energy at different parts on the globe. So it's conceptually related, these two. Looking at efficiency of solar panels, obstruction, angle, it relates also to maybe some environmental questions, some questions about geography and differences there. So teaching renewable energies or energy efficiency and awareness can also relate to other areas that require education or that are in the curriculum. Okay, this is a exhibit, one of my favorite exhibits that we did for a few science centers. There's one at Saibono up in Joburg, Gauteng, which I think has got the best science center in the country. It's one of those stationary bikes that you climb on the bike and you start pedaling, and then you turn on different loads. There's a light, there's a television. The television actually has a camera pointing at you so that you can see yourself cycling, which always, you know, surprises, you know, that, that this is possible, and you can, there's interaction in that way. And then there's light bulbs, energy-saving light bulbs together and light bulbs connected in a line, in series. And you can physically feel how much more difficult it is to pedal depending on the load. So you've got a direct feedback to your own body. And we created a poster that was related to this called How Many Cyclists? And it was sort of referring to an experiment that they did in the UK where they had a house set up connected to a barn full of more than 200 different club cyclists. Now, the people in the barn, well, in the house, were unaware of the barn. I mean, if, I don't know if you can see this picture down here. There's the barn, which they just assumed was, you know, nothing really happening in here. And here's the little house. What they were doing during their working day is just, you know, putting on devices and things. And the poor cyclists would have to really get into, you know, get into gear, literally and figuratively, to try and meet these demands. And certain appliances take a lot more cyclists. So as you can have a look over here, the microwave takes 11, vacuum cleaner takes 24, 18 for a hairdryer. This was something that a lot of people were unaware of, because a hairdryer, the better hairdryer, up to, you know, 2,000 watts and even more now, some of these ones, and 24 for a washing machine. That's something else. A washing machine, dishwasher, they take a lot of energy. So this device, this that we made for Cybono, can help, you know, communicate the energy needs of different appliances, which can relate to an activity in the curriculum about series parallel device. Well, it's a little circuit board that allows you to put a light bulb or different kinds of resistors in series or parallel, switch them across, and you've got a little hand crank that you use to generate. And you can feel, you can literally feel, you know, the difference when you've got a light bulb and then another light bulb, if they're connected in series, which has more resistance, therefore you need to really, you know, do a little bit more, or if you put them in parallel. So it's communicating some physical concepts as well as giving some education. So just to conclude, my father also told me this when he was telling me about the thermoelectric converter, that primary school learners taught about littering motivated their parents. So the impact might be a bit quicker than we think. So you think, okay, this is good, but it's a bit of a long-term solution, because we're even speaking about primary school activities. It's going to be a while before these guys are, you know, active players in the market. And, you know, we've got a problem now that needs to be addressed. But you'll be surprised. We've got a little girl in primary school, and she comes back and she talks about the things she's learning. We assist her with projects. If there's work done in primary schools about energy education, energy efficiency, possibilities out there, this will move through the community reasonably fast, or it has the potential to do that. So I just wanted you guys to be aware that it's not that there's going to be a lag, of course, but it might make an impact reasonably quickly as the information from the students, you know, go across to their parents. So, you know, so It was apparently quite an interesting study, because it was about the environmental impact on littering, and, you know, the students really came on board pretty quickly, and just by their behavior and a few of the words that they spoke about, their parents were almost shamed. Their parents were highly motivated. They certainly didn't want their children to be more environmentally responsible than they were, because they were the ones who were supposed to be educating and transmitting good values. So similarly with questions of energy, energy efficiency and the alternatives for energy creation and storage. If the kids are talking about it, the adults have a very strong incentive to also get involved. Thank you very much for your attention and for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Your name, I think.
Oh, sorry. My name is Peter Horshowski, but everyone just calls me Peter. it's reasonably obvious. Just call me Peter Horshowski. It's spelled Horshowski. So I've never quite understood how Horshowski comes out of those letters, that combination of consonants and vowels. So in fact, my real name is Gian Piero, but I mean, it was getting so complicated with an unusual first couple of names and that my mother just objected, started to call me Peter, and everybody has been since then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Gian Piero.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Whilst Mr. Gian Piero is settling, any questions and comments on the member? Honorable Khadebe, followed by Honorable Matmela, followed by Honorable Luca.
Thank you, Chair. This was a very nice, interesting one lately from Mr. Horshowski. my question was that this thermoelectric converter, I'm trying to understand whether they are available at the market. Because I'm just looking at the, as you are saying, how does it work? Because I know, sometimes I believe in practicality. That's what makes me to believe most of these things. And also what capacity do we generate? I think that to be able to give us a light to say the capacity of the electricity. The other one, Chair, goes to the Mr. Kudze. If we can be able also to re-explain the price trend of the solar PV. I heard you explain, but I didn't get it clearly. If you can be able to also to give clarity, that's one with your diagram there. But the other thing that I want to understand, because I see the solar water PV, you know, uses a little bit of water. It was one of the other things that probably I need to get an explanation from all the presenters, if possible, Chair. That due to the challenges that on the other side of the land, they've got challenges with water, scarcity of water. And government has already started installing these solar water geysers. What would be the impact if those solar water geysers don't get water? You know, because water becomes a problem because of the supply and because of the infrastructure that is deactivated, and you know, all the infrastructure. In one of the municipalities, you know, they were telling me that the infrastructure was installed before the Second World War. You know, so if you can just check how old is that infrastructure, it's very old. The other question relates to one of your other slides, because your slides are not being numbered, where your slide speaks in terms of the benefits of the home power generation of the with PV, sorry. Where it says homeowners can also generate income. Maybe if you can be able to explain to us to say how are they going to generate income? And on what probably estimation of amount they're going to generate income, because you need to understand that once you start saying homeowners they can be able to generate income, people start get excited, you know. But once that thing doesn't come to that realization, it becomes a problem. The last question speak to the cost that you've given, that for the new generation capacity for the cold, you need to pay 30 rand per watt nuclear 40 rand, solar wood storage 50 rand. I'm trying to check the balances here. That in terms of the sustainability of this electricity generation, what are you suggesting? I don't know that in your conclusion you spoke about, you know, solar PV, that they are the one that recommended. But I'm trying to look at the sustainability in the long term, right? That is solar it's one something that must be, you know, used. But at the current moment you don't have that technology and systems in place, then we have to import everything. That only means South Africa won't be able to generate its own income. Our money, you know, gonna sell it outside and be transforming dollars, you know. But when you look at the coal system that we have, it's our own generation system that we don't have to pay. We just use our own resources and dig and then get the coal, make our system to continue to run. Ah, come on. I know that I'm going to trigger you. I'm trying to understand what will be the longer running take, because I'm looking at the current aspect that you must be able to use the current resources that we have. Up until we are at the stage of having the whole quality education and infrastructure that you can be able to develop our own solar panels and our own solar, you know, systems and the storages. Because at the current moment, you know, I heard that there's still a challenge around the issue of the storage. How do we deal about those things? Because it's a very big challenge. Thanks, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the presentation, especially the last one of Peter. My question is on this two-legged thing that creates or generates heat. Does it work? Can you use it for cooking as well as heating geyser water and the machine, washing machine? Can you be able to use that, or is it just using little things? Then when I come to Mr. Danny, who's here, about the car that you're saying it's only 100K.